Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Happy June 2nd. Well, it's June 2nd, first week in June. I cannot believe how the calendar's flying by. I say that all the time, but it really is true. Just imagine how fast time goes. I mean, they say, you know, time flies when you're having fun. Well, the industry is definitely going through what some might not consider fun, and that's really our hot topic today. We're going to be talking in the hot topic segment. Why is it that some companies fail and some companies succeed? So we're going to get into a really interesting discussion with the regular panelists. We're going to do our famous roundtable discussion. You know, so many of you tell me, Dave, I love having the guests on. You guys got such good, great guests and, you know, really valuable information comes from that. But we just really like it when it's just the four of you just sitting around and chatting about this and then bringing in the various elements. So we're going to be Andy, Alice, Joe, and I are going to sit around talking about why some companies succeed and some companies fail. We're going to get into it. Also got Sam Garcia of Mortgage Daily. He'll be on with us a little bit. Always interesting to see what he has to share. Got Tony DeGaritano, who is just dialing in. Paul, God, we got a good lineup here. So let's get into it. First of all, start off with our sponsors. Thank you so much, United Guaranty, QM compliant options with benefits for borrowers and lenders. In addition to a wide range of borrower paid MI options, United Guaranty's qualified mortgage insurance QMI suite includes a lender paid MI. It's called to LPMI that has the benefits of for many borrowers and lenders because of the premium is paid for the lender paid option is paid by the lender. No cost MI cost need to be included in the QM 3% cap. So some real features about that. Now LPMI, which is the lender paid MI, is QM friendly and versus the versatile option when you look at the various other benefits. For example, the benefits are really this. Often results in lower monthly payments when compared to borrower-paid MI options. So that's a big one, could help with the qualification side. There's no MI closing costs, big advantage for especially those tighter transactions, and more purchasing power compared to the regular method and also typically about 5% more house for, which gives you ability to buy buying power, but approximately 5% more house with the same monthly payment. So there's some real advantages to this. Check out the QMI options today by going to www.UG, stands for United Guarantee Corp, UGCorp.com, or check them out on our website, looking on the landing on the upper right-hand corner. Click on it, on the logo, and you'll go right to their website. Appreciate United Guarantee for being a part of the broadcast and being a sponsor. Also, a special thank you goes to Velma. Many of you are hearing about the broadcast and sending out notifications. Brent and I were sleeping on the switch. We just got out just before the broadcast today. But that kind of helps because people go, oh, yeah, I got to dial in. So last-minute notification, and thank you so much, Velma. That stands for Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. If you're looking for a marketing solution to help you differentiate your company, use what we're using. Velma, check them out at Velma.com. Get a hold of Brent Emler. You'll really like him. Really enjoy the conversation with him. Very, very interesting. Great technology. Let's get into what's interesting things happened in the markets today. If you have been looking at volatility, Joe Farr is here to kind of straighten us, share it all. That really interesting what you were sharing just before the broadcast started.
Yeah, really, not often do you have things that you can really point to causing market to move, especially when it's volatile, but today we did. MBS prices kind of drifted lower early in the morning and preceding the economic data that was scheduled to come out, which included the ISM, which is pretty big index, pretty big measure of manufacturing activity. When it came out this morning, the announcement was that the measure was 53.2. Now, anything over 50 is gross, so 53 is showing growth, but a measure of 55 was expected. When it came out, the information caused the market to improve. Rose about 6:30 seconds, so not big move. But soon thereafter, Dave, tweets started coming out, and not rumors, but expectation that there was an error in the calculation of the ISM index, and proved to be true. Starting about 11, I guess, MBS prices started to fall in reaction to what was later announced as a better-than-expected ISM index. So the error that the ISM index, the Institute of Supply Management, identified was that they had simply used the wrong seasonal adjustment for the May number. They'd used the seasonal adjustment they should have used for the April number. They used it for the May number. And they reported that the correct measure was 56, a pretty big improvement from 53.2, mm-hmm. better than expected. And then later they revised that again to say, actually, the number is 55.4. All right, so I don't think that they'll change that. But if they don't, that's a little better than expected, and good growth. But caused a lot of volatility, and I feel sorry for those guys who executed trades based on what they thought was a weak number, and it became a strong number.
I wonder if there's any liability going back to the guys at the Institute of Supply Management.
You have to assume that that's no liability sort of disclosure. That'd be too big.
Yeah.
They couldn't afford that.
Yeah.
So we're starting off the week with some volatility, which is similar to what it was last week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a short week, but lots of volatility. For the week, last week, MBS prices improved again. This was like the fifth week in a row. Just going back to MBS prices over the last couple months, since April 1st, we're up 300 basis points in price. And had some of the best prices since the day that the Fed announced, it was the day the Fed started talking about their expectation to begin the taper later in the year. That happened in their June meeting in mm-hmm. 2013. So, yeah, we've seen a nice improvement. And it's interesting that this improvement has occurred at the same time the stock market's reaching all-time highs. And usually what's good for stocks is not good for mortgage rates and vice versa. But what in the past has been good for both has been quantitative easing. And so you look around and you see, you know, the Fed's getting out, but what we're seeing right now is that ECB's getting in. And the market expects at the Thursday ECB meeting, press conference or announcement, however they do that, there'll be some indication of further easing on their part. There'll be some kind of stimulative policy taken to help not only the European market, but it's the expectation of this has caused European bonds to fall, which has spilled over into the U.S. bonds and is one of the reasons that MBS prices and mortgage rates have improved is because of this expectation for some form of ECB stimulation. That's to take effect or to be announced on Thursday of next week, by the way. And then economic data hadn't given anybody too much of a reason to believe the U.S. economy is headed strongly in one direction or the other. You know, we've seen some mixed data.
Mixed.
Last week, jobless claims were better than people expected. Durable orders were better than expected. Chicago PMI was better than expected, but then things like pending home sales. Of course, first quarter GDP was revised significantly lower, but a lot of that, Dave, had to do with inventories. The buildup in inventories or the drop in inventories that occurred in the first quarter caused, by some estimates, GDP to be 1.5% below what it would have been had inventories not fallen. So expectations are that that's going to reverse into a benefit to the second quarter GDP. So, to look at the week ahead, they're really just, who knows what's going to drive the market, but two big events, the ECB meeting Thursday, and, mm-hmm. and since that's happening during the day on Thursday in Europe, should be early in the morning for us that we should hear something about what their expectations are. And then the jobs report on Friday. 8:30 Friday morning Eastern time will be another strong indication of the direction and pace of U.S. economic growth.
And you
last
got
month,
both,
you remember,
both
288.
Yeah, yeah. We have both non-farm payrolls and the unemployment rate. Is which one is going to have the of the greater? Do you think is it the unemployment number
no.
that's going to be the?
No, I think people don't trust the unemployment number for anything.
I think you're right. That's exactly what I was thinking.
I think it's all going to be the net new jobs created.
Yep.
And, you know,
it's
inside that number's wage inflation, which at some point is going to begin to be a big have a big influence on MBS prices.
Well, I had someone trying to – I agree with you. I had someone listening to a commentary over the weekend in one of the podcasts I was listening to, and they're saying, you know, as long as the Fed's focused on the unemployment rate, you know, that is going to be something to be watching. And I go, I don't think anyone believes that number anymore. I mean, it's
no.
unemployment. It's just, you know, so many people have left the workforce, so it's the – you know, it'll be interesting. Non-farm payroll. Well, you know, one thing you got to have is a service like MBS Quoteline to keep track of it, especially when you have things like ECB coming in. That should be a big announcement on Thursday. Joe, thank you so much for the update, and can't wait to have you on in the Hot Topic segment, again, of course, throughout the broadcast, but again, sharing from your perspective why companies are succeeding and some companies are failing and what's going on there. We're going to be right back with Paul Mallow right after the break. It's good to have you all with us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginny Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Many good websites out there to check up on all that's going on as relates to what is good information, but there's one of the better ones is whatever Paul Mallow is connected with. That's what I follow because this guy has a way of tracking it, and so does his associates there at www.imfnews.com. Paul Mallow, hope you had a good Memorial Day, and good to have you back on the broadcast here.
Thanks for having me. Great weather here, and finally in the Washington, D.C. area. So all you Californians, you're going to be jealous of us. But anyway, we're not here to talk about the weather. What do you want to talk about, David, the news?
Well, let's talk about the news, IMF news to be specific.
Yeah, well, we got done crunching the first quarter depository numbers, and the commercial banks and thrifts, you know, they took in roughly $3.37 billion in mortgage banking income in the first quarter. You know, the good news is they earned money off the business. The bad news is it was down like 36% from the fourth quarter and about 56% from the same period a year ago. But keep in mind, you know, as you well know, you and Chuck, you know, the last 2 years have just been phenomenal on mortgage profits. So this is an adjustment to the business. We all know there's, you know, a lot of guys are wringing their hands, wrenching what they're going to do to survive and partner with someone else and get their businesses ready for 2 or 3 years of $1.1 trillion to $1.3 trillion in production. At least that's what we think. So, you know, as we've reported before, you know, we could see 30% of companies merge out of existence or maybe more, but we don't know. There's a lot of talk. There's a lot of talk going on there about deals. Interestingly, you know, it's a lot of mid-sized non-banks, banks, you know, repositioning for themselves for the future. You know, no one's talking about mega deals. I mean, the largest company that's on the block is probably PHH Mortgage, and there's not a lot of talk that thing's going to trade this year because of because, quite frankly, the production outlook's pretty ugly. So that's on IMF News today. We also have a story about Calibre launching a non-QM suite of products. That's an interesting update. We've been hearing that rumor for a couple months now. They're getting into some, you know, they're not like making a huge splash, but, you know, they're getting into some jumbo non-QM stuff. They're doing national loans to, what is the word I'm looking for? Anyway, foreign nationals who are residing
in
the U.S. buying homes here. Yeah, they're getting, I know New Penn, Louis Ranieri shops in that business. So they're getting into that. They're getting into asset depletion kind of loans. So, you know, it sounds like they're, you know, getting in. I would guess somewhere down the line they're going to securitize. I would assume the jumbo stuff, they're going to flip to some depositories. We're trying to get some more details. This came out this morning. So that's an interesting development. We did our first quarter ranking on warehouse providers. Pretty ugly news there. Commitment levels were down significantly, but usage levels were just ugly in the first quarter, particularly January. Some bar was only using 20-30% of their lines, and that's really bad. But those numbers have since improved. We're starting to hear a pickup in activity, falling rates. You know, we don't know what this year is going to look like. You've seen the numbers, the estimates. We're looking at $1 trillion to $1.2 trillion. The more bearish side is $1 trillion. You know, it's funny, though. You know, the MBA does its application surveys. You know, there's some talk that those they're relying too much on the bigger guys, and there's a lot of smaller guys coming up in the ranks, and that maybe the MBA picture isn't as quite clear as it should be, that they're not capturing enough of the market to get a true read. But, you know, these things take time to play out, so we'll see what happens there. We have a story about the correspondent channel. More companies are looking into getting into it. Also a story about the AIG restructuring official, Jim Milstein, is now in the private sector talking about Fannie and Freddie. He wants these guys to have the ability to build capital and eventually maybe sell them to the public. That's an ongoing debate. No one thinks Fannie Freddie legislation is going to happen, and it's going to be all done through administrative orders and through the Federal Housing Finance Agency and Mel Watt. You know, it continues to be a fascinating story. But the big story will be their second quarter earnings. I mean, by the time those come out, they'll pretty much have gotten all their huge settlements in. They've captured their deferred tax assets. So we might get a true picture of what their profitability is going to look like. And as we've talked here among the staff at IMF News, you know, how could these guys not make money? Their cost of funds is next to nothing. Their new book of business is pristine. If they don't make some kind of money, someone should be taken out and shot, because, you know, how do you not make money, you know, with their huge portfolios, which have all cleaned up? So, again, that continues to be a fascinating story. And then one quick thing on short takes. We get a little speculation about what's going on with the sale of PHH Mortgage, which the short story is.
Right.
We don't hear much about it. We don't know if there's any. They're not close to a deal, it looks like. They're selling their fleet business, apparently, according to Reuters. But we don't cover the fleet business, so we can't confirm that story. But that's the rumor. So that's all the good news for Monday.
The good news. Hey, I got a question for you on the Calibre deal. Are they a remarketer of existing products such as offered, such as your friend there in Southern California, Citadel, or are they remarketing some other products, you think? Or are they really going out with their own brand of non-QM?
Well, it sounds like it's their own brand. Dan Pearl in Citadel is the guy you're talking about in California.
Right.
He does non-agency, non-prime. Dan won't tell me who his investors are, but, you know, it looks like he's got a good group of investors backing him, at least buying his whole loan paper since he's a non-bank. I think Dan has talked about securitizing maybe later this year. I don't know where the product's going to wind up at Calibre. It's a good question. My guess is they'll probably flip the jumbos to a depository. As far as the other stuff goes, it could, you know, basically, you know, insurance companies are very quietly buying this paper. That's what we've been hearing, and they're not about to announce it to the world because for all sorts of reasons, which we'll explore at another time.
Lots of interesting stuff. You do track it. Folks, if you are not signed up to receive the daily notification or the email blast, you need to go to the website, www.imfnews.com. Get signed up for it. Paul and the team there do an outstanding job getting the scoop on all the great stories. So, Paul, thanks so much. Good to have you back.
Thank you, David. Have a good one.
You bet. It's good to talk to you. Alice Alvey, you are here and with us. So good to have you back. You've been traveling around the country a lot like I have. Excuse me, my voice is starting to fight a cold from vacationing in New York last week, Al. So my voice has got some sounds like it's going sideways here on me. So talk to us about everything regulatory, the regulatory world, compliance.
Well, you know, the main thing, hello, everybody, and happy Monday. The main thing I want to make sure everyone's aware of is that you do need to get out and comment at the Federal Register, and you can access this rule from the CFPB website, and it's titled Amendments to the 2013 Mortgage Rules under the Truth in Lending Act. You know, Dave, this has been posted now since May 6th, so it's been, I guess, just a month, but there are only 5 comments out there, and only one of them is from an entity. So the Credit Union Association of the Dakotas has beat everybody to the punch, and they actually posted today. You can read that one. It was published by Monica. Actually, I think the name is showing up as Robbie Thompson from the website. But for me, I thought, you know, have people been getting out there and commenting on the concept of trying to come up with a cure for the qualified mortgage points and fees test? So if you closed a loan, it goes through audit post-closing, and someone finds an error in your calculations. Now, I know you're thinking, how the heck is that going to happen, right? We check it 6 times before it actually goes to closing now, and then we check it again just to make sure. And what, you know, how does a mistake possibly get through? Well, you and I all know that the HUD one's going back and forth multiple times. You have times changes may happen at closing or by the attorney or the closing agent. So this everything happens, right? It's mortgage banking. You just know there's going to be a fire somewhere. In any case, this proposed rule on the website is showing that you can file comments until July 7th, but this particular component of it has a comment period that expires on the 5th, which is this week. So I am really pushing folks. You've got to get out there. You've got to comment. You can take a look at what the Credit Union Association of the Dakotas said, and they picked up on some key words that everyone should be aware of and comment on. So if you say, I made an error in good faith, then the law has to define good faith. Now, how do you define the word good, right? We struggled with that all the time in regulation. And they brought up a good point about that. How do you compare the pricing in good faith? Is it compared with all my loans, or is it compared with just my loans that are qualified mortgage? So I agree with them in the point that if it's going to be, did I price the loan in good faith in the first place, and we just had a mathematical error occur on the closing somewhere in the process with the final HUD, then I agree. It would be great to say if we could say it's compared with pricing on similar loans, because they're trying to narrow that down to just comparing it to QM. The other thing that's in the proposed rule is how long do we have? And interestingly enough, when you read this, they're writing about all of the people who are going to think about how to manipulate the system, right? So how many laws do we get because, you know, we have to think through the shysters, right? People are going to find a way around it. So if we were to say, well, we're going to give you 120 days to correct an error, but you would have to correct your error before the consumer filed a notice with you. So there's all this discussion about, you know, were the points and fees financed? If it was financed, how do we give a cure? If there was a problem is it non-QM, and when did I discover it? Did my audit firm respond back to me in time within 120 days? So this particular group wants it to be a year. They look at it as, hey, I'm giving a longer time, right, a full year. I'm giving my customer more time to get money back, right? Well, CFPB is saying, well, there'll be people that manipulate that. There'll be lenders that manipulate, call it a non-QM, and when it's convenient, I'll flip it to QM. I don't know why someone would do that. I don't know. So they are looking at that creditors that act in good faith and make an inadvertent error, there should be no further penalty. I think that's a great comment everyone should say. If I have this issue, I cure it within your deadline. I am then not subject to any further penalty. That would be an important statement we want to make sure that they put within the regulation. So I think that letter picked up on a few good points of the nuances in the rule that everyone needs to pay attention to. I haven't seen anything from MBA yet being posted, so I just want to encourage everyone to please get out there and comment. There's one last part of this. CFPB is also asking for comments on should there be a tolerance for DTI. I don't think there's any way you can put anything in writing about income. I'm going to say it's your job to defend your income calculation, you know, if there's a disagreement in a self-employed borrower. But where you could maybe put in writing some tolerances would be in debts that were included or excluded. You know, if you said, hey, we left it out, we thought that was okay in this case, an auditor's coming in and saying, no, you had to leave that debt in. You know, that's a yes-no comparison, and if we have a difference of an opinion, can we say, X amount of reserves offsets that debt, you know, something along that line. So they're looking for ideas on DTI potential cures. So heads up, everyone, that comment period's really tight. I'm not sure we can believe the July 7th date out there. I like to be conservative since in the rule it says June 5th. So get out there and comment, everyone. And I'm looking forward
how do
to
they do that again?
Later, Dave. Oh, yes,
yeah,
you can
can't
go
wait.
Straight to the CFPB website now. It's a piece of cake. You know, go to your favorite browser, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and if yours, you can do CFPB, and it'll probably come up. Then over on the right-hand side, you see laws and regulations, and then from that drop-down box is notices and comments, and you can just click on that and type away. And actually, if you like the NUA of Dakota or CUA of Dakota's comments, you can just say ditto. Well, you know, take their PDF and say, hey, I'm on the same page as they are. Or just free type your own comments. It works.
Interesting. That's good, good. So go to the CFPB website. On the right-hand side under laws and regulations, you will see the comments, and you'll see it right there is what you're saying.
Yes, and you'll also be able to click right over and look up the actual verbiage in the text if you want to do that as well.
Good. Yeah, I've been over in the CFPB website. It's actually pretty decent. I mean, they're doing a good job of trying to at least make it easy access, not bury it in like some of the government websites.
Right.
Excellent stuff, Alice. So good to have you back. Can't wait to have you be a part of the broadcast. Why some they had the Hot Topic segment in the broadcast. Get your feedback because I know you are out there a lot tracking around and seeing a lot of reasons why some succeed. And it's even sometimes amazing why some failed. The ones that failed shouldn't. Just doesn't seem logical sometimes. We can't wait to get
right
into that. We're going to be back, folks, right after this break. We've got both Tony Garitano and Sam Garcia coming up. Look forward to hearing their comments. And, of course, the Profit Doctor is in the mix and in the house. We'll talk to you in just a minute. Be right back.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us, everybody. We got Tony Garitano in just a second. By the way, I want to tell everybody, we had Michael Keller on here who is with Easy Mortgage Apps. They're launching it today. It goes live, open to the public, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's a big release of the Easy Mortgage app. It's also known as Lone Sasquatch. You can listen to the broadcast. They have uploaded it, and they got all the broadcasts in there, so you can listen to all the Lickin' on Lending broadcasts. How about that? Pretty cool. Glad to have them supporting the broadcast, and we want to support them. Folks, go check it out. EasyMortgageApps.com, and you can see the download the Lone Sasquatch, or you can do it from the App Store, and it's live and available. East 4 p.m. Eastern is the launch day is today, June 2nd. So good to have you with us, folks. And now we also have Tony Garitano with us. Tony, good to have you on the broadcast.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good, good. By the way, what's your thoughts on Mike, what Michael's doing with Easy Mortgage Apps and the Lone Sasquatch?
I think it's a good application. I mean, the more that you can do in a mobile environment, I think the better it's going to be for the industry. You know, you have to kind of be able to be where borrowers are, and I think they are increasingly mobile. So I think this will be a good tool for the industry, and I hope that it gets a lot of good traction.
Me too. It's opening today at 4 p.m. Well, let's talk about technology. Can technology, seriously, Tony, I've wondered about this as I was flying back in preparation for our broadcast. Can technology really help lenders boost volume?
Well, I think it can. I think, you know, I mean, we're moving to a purchase market, and for example, you opened the radio show today, Dave, by talking about how you're using CRM technology.
Yeah.
And how that has improved viewership of the radio show. And I think that the lenders can learn from that lesson and use similar technology. Some of them are too dependent on refinances and the like, and that's just not going to cut it. And I think that they need technology to reach out to referral partners, clients that they've serviced in the past, new partners like home builders and realtors, and CRM technology is really a good way to do that. And I think the proof is in the pudding, too. I mean, you're seeing a lot of loan origination systems acquire CRM technologies over the past 12 months. I mean, you know, why are they doing that? Because lenders need an automated way to connect with borrowers.
Yes.
And CRM technology helps them do that. And to your earlier point, so does mobile technology.
Yes. So do you have any specific examples that you can share with our listeners on how lenders have actually used technology to accelerate their loan volumes and growth?
Yeah, I just got this case study this morning from GMH Mortgage Services. And they're roughly 85% of their volume is purchase loans. So what they're trying to do is increase their referral base of valued real estate, builder, and affinity partners, and also customers. So they're using CRM technology and pushing it out to their loan officers so that they can create, you know, marketing and customer care campaigns that are highly targeted to borrowers' needs, you know, and that make their referral partners also a little bit proud to be aligned with them.
Yeah,
and
what's the name of the
cool
company
about
again?
What they're doing is that they're populating these CRM and marketing campaigns with actual loan data.
Interesting.
So, and you know, the only way they can do that is by using technology. So
now, what's the name of the company?
Some lenders.
Yeah, what's the name of the company that's doing that?
The company is called GMH.
Hmm.
Called
and so
GMH
you're seeing them.
Mortgage Services.
Yeah, okay. So you are actually seeing some companies doing it. I mean, I've always believed this is possible. Our partnership with Velm has been outstanding. I mean, you can see how you do it. You've got to be disciplined. It does bring about certain processes, and it's getting to be more of a process. What about the social media? That's a form of technology. It seems to be helping some. I'm seeing some absolutely say, no, don't waste your time. It's a nice thing to get distracted with. But others are saying, no, it's working. It's really working for us.
I agree. I think social media, it's something to create brand awareness and to get information about your company out there to people that you may not normally meet. I mean, I heard some LOS vendor tell me that they got 3 deals from tweet referrals.
Yeah.
And I found that to be so interesting.
Yeah.
That lenders were looking at their services to their tweets, and they actually got 3 deals in, I would say, the last 12 months. The conversation started from tweets.
Yeah, I'm hearing that too. It's amazing how the younger generation is shifting over to Twitter. I have one teenager and one that's 23. They're both using Twitter. They go, Dad, Facebook's a thing of the past. I go, dang, I can't. I just learned how to use it. And so it is. It's really important. But here's Facebook works. I had Jessica Peterson on a few weeks ago, who is really good at the whole Facebook promotional thing and teaches people how to use it and the pros and cons and how to watch out for the traps. She got on with me. She says, Dave, I see you're not using this. Dude, just try this. Would you make three adjustments? So I did those three adjustments she told me to make. I had a lead that came off of that came within 30 minutes of us doing that. People, Noah said, we didn't know you did this. And I go, oh, my gosh, this is just, it's real. Technology can help. Tony, thanks so much for being a part of the broadcast. It's good to hear your voice again, friend.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Always a pleasure, folks. Check it out. Tony, you can email Tony at tony@progressandlending.com. Go to the website, progressandlending.com. Great publication that he has, two of them, actually. And I'm just privileged to write for him and be a part of what Tony is doing. And we're so glad, Tony, you contribute to this broadcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave.
You bet. Someone else who's a regular person I check with routinely is Sam Garcia. Sam is a guy that's got this Mortgage Daily thing. Many of you are getting his messages. Now say, people, yeah, but why would I want to pay for something I can get for free from others? Well, there's a little secret that Sam has embedded in his application that makes his program, his email blast at a subscription so valuable, and it's the data. There's so much research data out there. And you go, well, yeah, but I don't need to do research. Well, you should. You should find out what's out there. Sam Garcia, good to have you on the broadcast. What's catching your attention? You're tracking all the stories across there like Paul does, but you approach it from a different angle. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier you were talking about the employment report. Of course, that's coming up next week, and that's something we track real closely, primarily for the mortgage industry as far as how many jobs are going on, because non-banks list, they've got the mortgage sector that has non-bank mortgage jobs in there. So we can kind of track and see, if we're going up or down, which, of course, has been going down. But what's interesting is last month when we got the main number, we had the U.S. in general as a whole for all industries added jobs. It looked like it was a pretty good number. Above 200,000 jobs added for the country, and yet rates still improved. Yields went down, and it turns out, because you were talking earlier about the unemployment number versus the jobs added, and it was really the job participation rate that drove that. So we kind of keep our eye on that particular factor of how many people are actually out there trying to get jobs, and that was a little disappointing last month, and that helped drive yields down.
Yeah, that was. I mean, the participation rate has not been good. It's just going the wrong direction. It's like when you have government programs where you can stay at home, make as much money as taking one of these jobs that they created. Granted, a lot of the jobs created were in the lower end of the market, low end of the price range. People say, you know what? I can stay home, make more money off the government. That's just sick. Anyway, but let's get into some of the other stuff that you are tracking that you want to share with our listeners this morning. I said readers because I'm thinking of you, our listeners.
I like you talking about the social media aspect, because with social media, it's kind of interesting that some people can thrive with no electronic technology, and they're just great person to person. Others thrive within technology and within social media. And it's interesting you said you made those few adjustments, and you were able to actually generate some leads from it. And that's exactly what it is. Find your medium. It may be Facebook. It may be LinkedIn. And of course, the kids seem to be migrating away from Facebook at this point. Why should they be in it now? Their parents are in it. They don't want to be watching. So they're finding alternatives. But that's an interesting factor you brought up there. But saw last week happen that was kind of interesting is we saw a couple of discrimination suits filed by cities against lenders. And what's interesting is one of them.
Hate to hear that.
Yeah, and of course that's a big unknown out there because you've got this effective discrimination where you might have taken all the right steps, but if it has an impact on a particular class, then you're going to be liable. So that's an issue that everybody's dealing with at this point. But in this particular case, you had the city of Providence, Rhode Island, suing Santander, and they're alleging that they discriminated by basically not lending to minority communities and focusing on other white communities. And then on the other side of that, you had Chase being sued by the city of Los Angeles, saying that they made loans to minorities and caused them to go into foreclosure. So it's, you know, it's interesting. I had a discussion today with Tim Root of Collingwood Partners, and, you know, we talked about how it sometimes seems like it's a catch-22 with lenders, you know, who on the one hand are being accused of making too many loans to borrowers who couldn't afford them, in Chase's case, and then on the other hand are being told that they didn't lend enough to minorities, like in Santander's case. It's a real tough tightrope to walk there.
Yeah, it really is. It's fascinating. When you start hearing about municipalities starting to sue our industry, that is not good, because here's what a lender can do in that situation, or a group of lenders will do. They hear that, and they go, we're pulling out of that market. So you want any municipalities, I don't think we have them as listeners, but if you want to exit or have liquidity and availability of credit, exit your community, go start suing the lending community. It's not to say you shouldn't discipline and work with those that are being abusive in your market. There's ways to do it, though. You just don't pick up and wholesale start suing a whole lot of people. That's interesting, Sam.
Yeah, the funny thing is none of them were complaining when all the loans were being made and their property taxes were rising and their, you know, payrolls were getting fat. But now they need some money, so, you know, they're looking, and one of those is to lenders. But, you know, what are you going to do? So another thing we saw this last week is that, you know, of course, the activity from our mortgage market index that we do with Loan Sifter and Optimal Blue, it was down, obviously, because it was a holiday week. But rates were better, and jumbo rates still really are 8, in this report, it was 8 basis points better than conforming rates still. So it doesn't seem to be letting up there with the negative spread between those two types of products.
Well, you'd think that would start drawing more non-agency type lenders to the market. I mean, especially when you realize, is it possible that your agency product is actually, QM product is actually more expensive now? And it is. And so you'd think that'd bring people back into the private securitizations to start coming forward. So we haven't seen that trend yet, but we'll see if that continues. Very interesting, Sam. There's so much out there. Let's talk briefly about your data. We only got 1 minute to hit on this. I just want to hit on it. Cover for us some of the research data that you have out there. It is so valuable.
Well, one of the things we got coming out in the next week or so is our quarterly mortgage employment index. And basically, we track layoffs of significant numbers at mortgage lenders, banks, non-banks, and so forth, and hirings, and then come up with a net. And we also list them by lender and by state, so you can see kind of where the jobs are coming and going. So that'll be real interesting to see what the first quarter report lands at, you know, versus what the government reports. And, you know, the government numbers, they aren't real helpful, because so much of the lending is going on in the banks, and the bank numbers are all just, you know, it's bank employees.
Yeah.
That may be mortgage, that may be deposits and so forth. So that doesn't really give us a good picture, whereas ours, you know, it actually drills down to see which banks and which lenders. And, you know, we go through the layoffs in each state. We go to the employment agencies in each state to get some of that data. So it's a real useful number. That's probably one of our biggest points of data that we collect there. But, you know, some of the other ones, of course, are origination and market share. We do quarterly surveys to get some of those numbers and servicing numbers, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of that goes into there. But the employment is the one to watch in the next couple of weeks.
Really valuable stuff you have, Sam. We appreciate so much our partnership with you. So good to have you on. Look forward to having you back next week. And be sure to say hi to everyone around there. Appreciate it.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it.
You bet. But you bet. Thank you. Well, let's get right into the Profit Doctor. We also, you know, what I'm thinking about, Andy, is rolling into the Hot Topic segment, looking at, we have 15 minutes left of the broadcast, and then rolling in, but starting with your Hot Topics in the Hot Topic segment, the Profit Doctor. How does that sound?
Well, Dave, whatever you want to do is fine with me.
Well, I'm looking at that because I really want to draw that out, and let's do that real fast. We're going to take a quick break, folks, and we're going to be right back with the Profit Doctor leading off the Hot Topic. Why some companies succeed and why some fail. Be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300
combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back, everybody. And as promised, let's start off with the Profit Doctor. And we've got joining us Alice, Alvy, and Joe Farr, our regulars. And we're really talking and focusing in on why some companies succeed and why some companies fail. Andy, you see so much of this, and I'm sure, I know you and I get together and we talk, as business partners, we talk about why some companies, it's just not always so predictable. So let's lead off, and you can get into us from your perspective, why is that? What's the answer to that question? Why some succeed and why some fail?
Well, Dave, I think that it has a lot to do with management, and there are some key fundamental steps that have to be applied to any business. And successful businesses do these things. And so there's lots of business books that have been written on keys to success. If you look at the Fortune 100, what is it that they do that makes them be consistently successful? And apply that back to mortgage companies. Because, you know, we're not creating a new product that's never been introduced before. We're selling houses, or we're selling rates. So we're selling the ability to buy a house, or we're selling a lower rate. So that, at the core of what we do, is, you know, there's not a whole lot more to that. So how we do it, how we differentiate ourselves among the other competitors in the market becomes key. And then how we actually manage our business is really the essential differentiation. Because
I think that let's get right to the management part of it, because that you hit on a really good point there, Andy. And it is, when you say people have a preconceived idea of what management means, how do you define that? Now, you're a CPA, so everyone's going to assume, well, he's obviously going to go right to the bottom line. Are you managing by the numbers and all that? But the answer might surprise us. Give us.
Well, I think it starts before that. I think that when we're managing a business, we have to first make sure we have a solid team. We have to make sure we have the right people doing the right things at the right time. And we have to have a product that we're offering that has a demand. Because if you have poor staff and a yucky product, you're going to fail. And you could have a great staff and a yucky product and still fail. It's a combination of so many things together that coalesces to success. It's not just one thing. But without the one thing, it can fail. But with just because you have 3 out of 5 doesn't mean you're going to be successful. It's doing all of the things consistently well. It's the discipline, the consistent focus, successful deployment of new strategies. There's so many pieces to this before you get to the bottom line, because you've got to start with what are you going to do and how are you going to do it. You have to answer some questions. You have to know, how much money does it cost to do it right the first time when you run an operation? And then how much sales do you have to generate the ROI that you want to achieve? And you apply the how much do you have to sell to generate the ROI versus how much does it cost to do it right the first time. That starts building your revenue and your expense model. And then you start looking at what does that drive in terms of your bottom line, and then how can you actually implement that into your business. You know, if you watch, you know, Austin is booming, as you know, Dave. There's construction happening everywhere. And I was watching this one particular construction site where they've been working on it for like, it seems like 9 months, just developing the ground, putting down the foundation, getting everything in the right place, and then all of a sudden the high-rise pops up and it's like, you know, 20 stories tall in 3 weeks, it seems like. That's because they built the foundation. They did the engineering study, they did the architectural plan, they got all the bottom foundational pieces built first, which for us in mortgage banking is the right product, the right market, the right technology, the right systems, part of systems includes accounting, part of systems includes, you know, marketing, CRM. You have to have all these pieces together. So having one or two that are wrong can cause you to fail. Not having all of them firing well, you know, makes it be successful. And you've used the analogy before, and I love this analogy. I use it all the time. You know, you've got your Ferrari, and you go into the mechanic, and they open up the hood, and you go, it's running really rough, I can't figure it out. And the guy gets a screwdriver, reaches in, turns one knob, half a turn, all of a sudden it runs just purrs like a cat, like it's supposed to. And the guy goes, all right, thanks very much, $500, please. And he goes, $500, it took you 5 minutes. And I go, yeah, it was $5 for my time and $495 for knowing which screw to turn.
Yes.
And that's the key to this stuff, too.
Yes.
It's knowing how to get everything in perfect alignment. So when you've got the finger on the pulse, you're able to really manage your business. It drives back to KPIs, key performance indicators, performance metrics. You know, I could keep going on this, but I know I got to stop because somebody else has
got
to
get everyone else in. Yeah. Well, there's a new program. It's been out for a while now. It's called The Profit on CNBC. And he talks about three things he focuses on, and you hit on them: people, product, and process. He says every business, those are the three things he focuses on. Now, I have process, and then I put a fourth one in there, because if you do all those right, then you have the profit. You have the business. That's there. Alice, it's definitely getting more complicated. And Andy says, I love the Ferrari story. I've told that so many times, and Andy's picked up and tells it even better. And is the fact it's knowing which screw to turn, but it's a balance. It's really bringing the whole ecosystem, I don't like that word so much, but it's really bringing the whole organization together. What are some of the issues that you're seeing that are causing some companies to succeed? I don't want you to talk about failure, but also, why are some of the ones failing out there? Your perspective?
Well, I think, to Andy's point about, the people, product, and the process, I think what's impacting folks is the cycles. And we've had some huge swings in the cycles, especially in the last year. If you look at how great things were, and then everything went down very significantly for a lot of companies. So you say you have to keep revisiting those. It's not something you do once and you set it aside. It's in our cases recently, I think it needs to be monthly that you're revisiting all of those points.
That's good.
So what are you measuring? How are you measuring? Because the workload changes. Your staff's capabilities and your staff's qualifications change. So we're finding a lot of folks are needing training, and they have to keep it customized, right? We're getting in and helping them to readjust people's skill sets for redesigning the process. And one of my mantras that I'm starting to pick up on is, you can have a good operation and sales isn't that great at their role, but operations picks it up. But I never see the opposite. I don't see, hey, I've got great salespeople, and they're filling in all the forms and getting everything out, and then it gets into operations, and that's not being managed at all, and they're just completely dropping the ball. I mean, usually you see that someone who's managing well as a company is making sure that they're managing both of those components very well. So I guess I'll just kind of say that what are we seeing today is people have a very strong focus on both. You have to manage sales, not in terms of are they getting enough sales in the door, but are the salespeople actually doing the work that's needed to have that proper handoff to operations. So those are some of the things we're seeing companies improve on, especially is that handoff between sales and ops and re-engineering their ops with the cycles.
Alice, why is it you think that some companies are just struggling getting that right? I mean, because it's not for a lack of desire. I mean, there's companies who care less. I got that. We don't talk about those. But those that are really trying, why do you think it is that – where's the breakdown?
Well, part of it is just being able to look up, right? We had a great analogy of it's like being at the grocery store and there's just this really long line and you're the cashier and all you're doing is you're just scanning. You're scan, register, get this one person through, right? So that's what we do. We process, we underwrite, we close, we get them closed. Everybody's just close. We got to close everything, especially as important as the closing is today, right? And you're getting higher pull-throughs, so you weren't anticipating this many of those loans closing. And you forget to look up. Right? Who's the person who's going to look up and go, wow, there's a line. Hey, I need help on aisle 5, So
yeah,
I think
that's so
it's
good.
Not from lack of wanting to be better, but they need sometimes outside people or management to look up and plan ahead.
Interesting. Good thoughts. Let's spin over to Joe. People say you see so many aspects of it, mostly from the market side of it, but you're also an observer. You have how many thousands of companies that use your service? And Joe, what are you seeing? What would you attribute why some companies are succeeding and some failing? We look at even the ISM index, the Institute of Supply Management. They struggle getting it right today. So, what's your thoughts on this?
You know, first, as talked about before the show, there's some things that aren't going to make you succeed, but they certainly can make you fail, like compliance.
Yes.
No, it's not going to make you succeed, or even quality, loan quality, is not going to make you succeed, but it certainly can make you fail. Andy kind of got on the same path that I wanted to go down. I describe our industry as manufacturing widgets.
Yeah.
We are all making the same thing. We are all selling it to the same place. So I believe to succeed, you've got to be a number of things that Andy described and Alice described, but you also have to be efficient. You have to be able to produce that widget such that you can make enough money to sustain your business. And to be efficient in that regard, I think you need to have good systems. You certainly have to have good people. You have to have good people that are working together. Your originators have to bring in quality work so you don't waste time on loans that aren't going to get pulled through. And you need a good way to be able to share data, collect it efficiently up front, and carry it throughout the process. So that's where I'd focus. And you got to control costs.
Yeah. Well, it brings us right back to our good friend, the Profit Doctor. So continue on, Andy.
Well, I think we've hit on a number of key points, and it's true, and it feels a little theory-ish. It's a little bit about what needs to be done, and when you bring it back home and you're listening to the show, and it's Wednesday evening, you're driving home, and you're listening to this broadcast, and you're going to go to the office the next day, what are you going to do different?
Yeah.
And I think turning it into an action item for our listeners is important, and there's so many things we talked about just now and so many elements that we covered. You know, I would go back and I would start with a vision. And I know, Dave, you're amazing at helping people do this, but I would start with a vision. And people are going to say, well, I want to be the 10th largest company in the world. I want to do $1 billion a month by next week. So no. You know, let's have a real vision and then figure out, kind of go back to the beginning, whiteboard it a little bit. What are you good at? What are your markets where you're strong, and how can you can expand upon that? How can you bring efficiencies? So start with what is your product, what are your people, how are you going to get to profitability with those? Have a budget, have an idea about how you can make money, because you may decide that you can't make money in the market, and then you have to decide if you have the resources to fund a loss on every single loan you close, and you may decide you don't want to do that. So it's a little bit back to basics, a little bit back to planning, a little bit back to understand who you are and what you're good at.
It really does come down to really knowing your strengths or weaknesses and filling in. I think that's one of the reasons we have been successful together. We both complement each other, and we get as much of the conflict out and the compliment in. And I think that's really key. So let me ask you a question. Let's go around to each one of you. Now, this is a rhetorical question to me, but I'm going to start with Alice. Do you think it is all about capital, Alice? I mean, more those that have just tons and tons of money in there, they're going to be successful?
No, I'm going to go with operations and being efficient in the operations and really making the best use of your staff, having a good process, obviously having a good loan origination system and knowing how to use it well. Being efficient can mean you're being profitable with each transaction, right?
That's right.
And you can do that if there are some successful brokers out there.
Yeah, so it's not – okay, good. Joe, is it about the capital?
Lots of capital will give you a chance to survive the valleys, but, it also might mean you just have that much more to lose if you don't do it well.
That's so true, Andy.
Or you're not paying attention to the small dollars, right?
Yeah.
To the small stuff, yeah.
I think it's management. I think that when I was at B of A, we had a great management team and we had almost endless capital and we could do anything we wanted to do and be in any market we wanted to enter. So with capital, you got so many options, but without management, it'll still fail. You've got to have management. Management that understands the principles, the people, how to build a team, how to create operational efficiencies, and how to run a profitable, by the numbers, key performance indicator, margin-based business.
Whoa, did you get all that? Got to slow this, rewind and write that all down. There was a lot in that last little soundbite. That was really,
so
really good.
Yeah.
We all agree. Well, here's the reason I bring it up, folks, is because so many people are pursuing capital thinking that's the answer to everything. I just need to go get more capital. I was talking to a guy this last week, went out and raised a bunch of capital, and guess what? He lost it all because he did not have the people, the processes, and the products in mind. The management, like Annie was just talking, messed up in compliance. I tell you, everyone's pursuing capital right now, thinking more about capital. It is important. But it's not everything. Folks, appreciate you being with us. Good to be part of your lives, the way of getting information. We're here as a public service to the industry. Catch us back here next week as we will be back with more content and a new guest. It'll be good to be with you. Thank you.
This has been Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.